Everyone loves to listen to a good book, and there are so many wonderful ones to choose, so we decided to bring you this podcast of Stories Come to Life. Each episode features a story from either classic or modern literature, especially chosen to be interesting and exciting to hear. So sit back, relax, and listen to this story come to life. Welcome to Stories Come to Life. I am your host, Catherine Lopez Luker. Henry, Jess, Violet, and Benny are now living in the cozy boxcar they found in the woods. Henry has good luck when he goes into town to see if he can find some work. Young Dr. McAllister is impressed with the way Henry works and invites him to come back every day to do odd jobs around the place. Maybe Jess, Violet, and Benny have the best time, though, searching for old dishes, building a fireplace, and discovering all kinds of interesting treasures in the forest. And Watch, the loyal dog, takes good care of everyone in this second installment of The Boxcar Children. Now sit back, relax, and listen to this story come to life. The Boxcar Children, Chapter 5, Housekeeping. The next morning, Jess was up before the others, as was fitting for a little housekeeper. That is, she was first, if we accept the dog, who had opened one eye instantly every time his little mistress stirred in her sleep. He sat watching gravely in the door of the car as Jess descended to get breakfast. She walked from the little waterfall quite a distance down the brook, looking at it with critical eyes. "This will be the well," she said to herself, regarding a small but deep and quiet basin just below the falls. Below that she found a larger basin, lined with gravel, with flat stones surrounding it. "This will be the washtub," she decided, "and now I must go back to the refrigerator." This was the strangest spot of all, for behind the little waterfall was a small, quiet pool in which Jess had set the milk bottles the night before. Not a drop of water could get in, but all night long the cool running water had surrounded the bottles. They were now fairly icy to the touch. Jess smiled as she drew them out. "Is it good?" asked Benny's voice. There he sat in the door of the car, swinging his legs, his arm around the shaggy dog. "It's delicious," declared Jess, "cold as ice." She climbed up beside him as she spoke, bringing the breakfast with her. The other two children sat up and looked at it. "Today, Jess," began Henry, "I will go back to town and try to get a job mowing lawns or something. Then we can afford to have something besides milk for breakfast." Milk suited Benny very well, however, so the older children allowed him to drink rather more than his share. Henry did not waste any time talking. He brushed his hair as well as he could without a brush, rolled down his sleeves, and started for town with the second dollar. "Glad you've got a dog, Jess," he called back as he waved his straw hat. The children watched him disappear around the curve and then turned to Jess expectantly. They were not mistaken. Jess had a plan. "We'll explore," she began mysteriously. "We'll begin here at the car and hunt all over these woods until we find a dump."
"What's a dump?" inquired Benny.
"Oh, Benny," answered Violet, "you know what a dump is. All old bottles and papers and broken dishes."
"And wheels?" asked Benny interestedly. "Will there be any old wheels?"
"Yes, maybe," assented Violet.
"But cups, Benny. Think of drinking milk out of a cup again."
"Oh, yes," said Benny politely. But it was clear that his mind was centered on wheels rather than cups. The exploring party started slowly down the rusty track, with the dog hopping happily on three legs. The fourth paw, nicely bandaged with Jess's handkerchief, he held up out of harm's way. I think this is a spur track, said Jess. They built it in here so they could load wood on the cars. And then, when they had cut all the wood, they didn't need the track anymore. This explanation seemed very likely, for here and there were stumps of trees and decaying chips. Violet took note of these chips and remembered them some days later. In fact, both girls kept their eyes open and pointed out things of interest to each other.
"Remember these logs, Violet, if we should ever need any," said Jess, pointing.
"Blackberry blossoms," returned Violet briefly, turning one over gently with her foot.
"Big, flat stones," remarked Jess later on as they came upon a great heap of them.
Here the track came out into the open sunshine, and broken pieces of rail showed clearly where it had joined the main track at some time in the past. And here, from the top of the wooded hill, the children could plainly see the city in the valley. They walked along the track, picking out a church steeple here and there, forgetting for a moment the object of their search.
"There's a wheel!" Benny cried triumphantly from behind.
The girls looked down, and with a glad cry of surprise, Jess recognized a dump at the foot of the hill. They found it not composed entirely of ashes and tin cans either, although both of these were there in great profusion. It was a royal dump, containing both cups and wheels.
"Oh, Benny," cried Jess, "if it hadn't been for you," she hugged him, wheel and all, and began turning over the rubbish with great delight. "Here's a white pitcher, Jess," Violet called, holding up a perfect specimen with a tiny chip in its nose.
"Here's a big white cup," said Jess delightedly, laying it aside.
"Want a teapot, Jessie?" inquired Benny, offering her an enormous blue enameled affair without a handle.
"Yes, indeed," cried Jess. "We can use that for water. I've found two cups and a bowl already. And Violet, we ought to be looking for spoons, too." Violet pointed without speaking to her little pile of treasures. There were five iron spoons, covered with rust.
"Wonderful," pronounced Jess with rapture.
Indeed, it is doubtful if collectors of rare and beautiful bits of porcelain ever enjoyed a search as much as did these adventurers in the dump heap. Benny actually found four wheels exactly alike, probably from the same cart, and insisted upon carrying them back. To please him, Jess allowed him to add them to the growing pile.
"Here's a big iron kettle," observed Violet. "But we won't really cook with a fire, will we, Jess?"
"We'll take it back, though," replied Jess with a knowing look. "We can pile lots of dishes in it." They could and did, but not until after Benny had discovered his beloved pink cup. It was a tea party cup of bright rose color, with a wreath of gorgeous roses on it, and a little shepherdess giving her lamb a drink from a pale blue brook. It had a perfectly good handle, gold into the bargain. Its only flaw was a dangerous crack through the lamb's nose and front feet. Jess made a cushion for it out of grass and laid it on top of the kettle full of treasures. All the things, even the wheels, were laid on a wide board, which the two girls carried between them. Can you imagine the dishwashing when the gay party returned to the freight car? Children do not usually care for dishwashing, but never did a little boy hand dishes to his sister so carefully as Benny did. On their hands and knees beside the clear, cool little washtub, the three children soaped and rinsed and dried their precious store of dishes. Jess scoured the rust from the spoons with sand. "There," she said, drying the last polished spoon. The children sat back and looked admiringly at their own handiwork. But they did not look long. There was too much to be done.
"Jess!" exclaimed Violet. "I'll tell you!"
Violet seldom spoke so excitedly. Even Benny turned around and looked at her.
"Come and see what I noticed inside the car last night!"
Both children followed her and peered in at the door.
See on the wall? Right over on the other door, Jess?
Now, all Jess could see were two thick chunks of wood, nailed securely to the closed door, opposite the open one. But she whirled around and around as fast as she could, clapping her hands. When she could get her breath, however, she skipped over to the board they had carried, dusted it nicely, and laid it carefully across the two wooden projections. It was a perfect shelf.
There, said Jess.
The children could hardly wait to arrange the shining new dishes on the shelf. Violet quietly gathered some feathery white flowers, a daisy or two, and some maidenhair ferns, which she arranged in a glass vase filled with water from the well. This she put in the middle, with the broken edge hidden.
There, said Jess.
You said there three times, Jessie, remarked Benny contentedly.
So I did, replied Jess, laughing, but I'm going to say it again. She pointed and said,
there!
Henry was coming up the path. Chapter 6. Earning a Living. Henry had all sorts of packages under his arm and in his pockets, but he wouldn't open them or tell a thing about his adventures until dinner was ready, he said.
Jess, you're a wonder, he exclaimed when he saw the dishes and the shelf.
The big kettle was selected, and they all began to pick blueberries as fast as they could, telling Henry, meanwhile, all about the wonderful dump. At last the tablecloth was spread, and Henry unwrapped his parcels before the whole excited family. I bought some more brown bread, he said, producing the loaves, and some more milk, in the same little store where I went yesterday. It's kept by a little old man, and it's called a delicatessen shop. He has everything in his store to eat. I bought some dried beef, because we can eat it in our fingers, and I bought a big bone for the dog.
His name is Watch, Jess interrupted.
All right, said Henry, accepting the name. I bought a bone for Watch.
Watch fell on the bone as if he were famished, which indeed he nearly was.
It was a rapturous moment when Jess poured the yellow milk into four cups or bowls, and each child proceeded to crumble the brown bread into it with a liberal scattering of blueberries. And then, when they ate it with spoons, nobody was able to speak a word for several minutes. Then Henry began slowly to tell his tale. I earned a dollar just this morning, he began proudly. I walked along the first shady street I came to, nice houses, you know, and there was a fellow out mowing his own lawn. He's a nice fellow, too, I can tell you, a young doctor. Henry paused to chew blissfully. He was pretty hot, Henry went on, and just as I came to the gate, his telephone rang. I heard it, and called after him and asked if he didn't want me to finish up.
And he said he did, cried Jess.
Yes, he said. For goodness sakes, yes, Henry answered, smiling. You see, he wasn't used to it. So I mowed the lawn and trimmed the edges, and he said he never had a boy trim it as well as I did. And then he asked me if I wanted a steady job.
"Oh, Henry!" cried Violet and Jess together.
"I told him I did, so he said to come back this afternoon, any time I wanted, or tomorrow. He said he didn't care just when, any time." Henry gave his cup a last polish with his spoon and set it down dreamily. "It's a pretty house," he went on, "and there's a big garden behind it, a vegetable garden, and an orchard behind that. A cherry orchard. You ought to see the cherry trees. Well, when I was trimming the edges near the kitchen door, the cook came and watched me." Henry laughed at the recollection. "She asked me if I liked cookies. Oh, if you had smelled them baking, you'd have died laughing, Benny. Delicious. So I said I did. And she passed me one out.
and when she went back, I put it in my pocket.
Did she see you? Asked Jess anxiously.
Oh, no, said Henry confidently, for I carefully chewed away for a long time on nothing at all.
Benny began to look fixedly at Henry's pocket. It certainly was still rather bulgy.
When I went, the doctor paid me a dollar, and the cook gave me this bag.
Henry grinned as he tossed the paper bag to Jess. Inside were 12 ginger cookies with scalloped edges, smelling faintly of cinnamon and sugar.
I'm going to keep track of everything I earn and spend, said Henry, watching Jess as she handed round the cookies with reverence.
How are you going to write without a pencil? Asked Jess.
There are pieces of tailor's chalk in my work bag, said Violet.
Henry gave his younger sister a gentle pat as she returned with her work bag and fished for the chalk. While the girls rinsed the empty dishes in the brook and stored away the food for supper, Henry was beginning his cash account on the wall of his bedroom. It was never erased, and Henry often now looks at the account with great affection. Soon the girls came to inspect it. Meanwhile, Benny looked on with great delight, as Watch tried to bury his bone with only one paw to dig with.
Earned, $1. Cash on hand, $3.85, read Jess aloud. Below, Henry had written, milk, 24 cents, bread, 10 cents, bread, 20 cents, cheese, 10 cents, milk, 24 cents, beef, 20 cents, bone, 5 cents, cloth, 10 cents.
Cloth! Exclaimed Violet. What on earth?
Henry laughed a little and watched her face as he drew out his last package and handed it to her.
I thought we ought to have a tablecloth, he explained, so I got a yard at the 10-cent store, but it isn't hemmed, of course.
With a cry of delight, Violet unwrapped the brown cloth with its edge of blue. Her clever fingers were already evening the two ends. She was never so happy as when with a needle. Henry set off again with a light heart. Here was one sister curled up happily against a big tree, setting tiny stitches into a very straight hem. Here was another sister, busily gathering pliant twigs into a bundle for a broom, with which to sweep the stray pine needles from the house. And here was Benny, curled up sound asleep on the ground, with the dog for a pillow. It was quite late when Henry returned. In fact, it was nearly 7 o'clock, although he didn't know that. Several treasures had been added in his absence. The broom stood proudly in the corner with a slim stick for a handle. The new tablecloth had been washed and was drying on the line. And Jess, who had decided to wash one garment a day, had begun with Benny's stockings. When Henry came, they were being put on again with much pride by Benny himself. Violet had darned a big hole in each. This time, Henry himself could not wait to tell his sisters what he had. He passed them the packages at once with shining eyes.
Butter! Cried Jess with a radiant face.
It was butter, cool and sweet. Nobody remembered that they had been a week without tasting either butter or meat when at last they sat down to their royal supper.
These are trick spoons, explained Henry. Turn them upside down and use the handle, and they become knives.
They were knives. Anyway, they were used to spread the delicious morsels of butter on the brown bread, with dried beef and a cookie for dessert. Who could ask for better fare? Certainly not the four children, who enjoyed it more than the rarest dainties.
I washed the doctor's automobile this afternoon, Henry related. Then I washed both piazzas with the hose, and tomorrow I'm going to hoe in the garden. Oh, wouldn't I love to have a nice cold swim in that brook?
Henry was hot and sticky, certainly.
He looked with longing eyes at the waterfall as he finished the last crumbs of his supper.
"I wonder if we couldn't fix up a regular swimming pool," he said, half to himself.
"Of course we could," replied Violet, as if nothing were too difficult. "Jess and I know where there are big logs and big flat stones."
"You do, hey?" said Henry, staring at his gentle little sister.
"Well, why couldn't we, Henry?" struck in Jess. "Just a little below this, there is a sort of pool already, only not big enough."
"Sure we could," cried Henry. "Someday I'll stay home from work, and we'll see."
Nobody realized that Henry had been working only one day in all. Anyway, it seemed as if they had always lived in the comfortable home in the freight car, with Henry plying back and forth from the city each day, bringing them new surprises. Henry went to bed that night with a head full of plans for damming up the brook. He almost shouted when he thought suddenly of Benny's wheels. He began to plan to make a cart to carry the heavy stones to the brook. And that was when he first noticed that Watch was not asleep. He could see his eyes shining red in the darkness. It must have been around 11 o'clock. Henry reached over and patted his rough little back. Watch licked the hand, but didn't close his eyes. Suddenly, he began to growl softly.
"Shh," said Henry to the dog.
Now thoroughly startled, he sat up. Jess sat up. They did not hear a sound.
"Better shut the door," breathed Henry.
Together they rolled the door very slowly and softly until it was shut. Still they did not hear anything. But still, Watch continued his uneasy growling. Violet and Benny slumbered on. Jess and Henry sat motionless, with their hearts in their mouths.
"Supposing it was some other tramp," whispered Jess. "Somebody else that wanted to sleep here."
"Watch would bite him," whispered Henry briefly. Jess never knew what confidence Henry had in the faithful dog. Then a branch cracked sharply outside, and Watch barked out loud. Jess smothered the dog instantly in her arms. But it had been a bark, and it was loud, clear, and unmistakable.
"That settles it," thought Henry. "Whoever it is knows there's someone in here."
And the boy waited with the new broom in his hand, expecting every moment to see the door opened from the outside. But nothing happened. Nothing at all. The children sat in perfect silence for at least half an hour, and nothing more was heard. Watch sniffed a little while when Henry finally rolled the door open again. But he then turned around 3 times and lay down beside Jess, apparently satisfied at last. Taking the dog's conduct as a sure guide, Henry composed himself for sleep.
"It must have been a rabbit or something," he said to Jess.
The occupants of the freight car slept peacefully until morning. Chapter 7. At Home. Jess and Henry had a short committee meeting next morning before the others awoke. It was agreed that nobody should be allowed to stray off into the woods alone, not even the dog. And with much mystery, Henry left some orders with all of them, as for what they should build for him during the morning.
"What for?" asked Benny.
"Shan't tell, old fellow," teased Henry. "You just build it, and you'll see later."
So Henry walked briskly through the woods, feeling sure that the noise in the night had been made by a rabbit. Having no watch, Henry made a slight mistake by appearing at the young doctor's door before 8 o'clock. He was just in time to meet the doctor coming in from a night call. If Henry had not been so eager to begin work, he would have noticed how the young man's dark eyes examined him from head to foot, even to his plastered hair, wet with brook water. It was not the doctor who directed his work, but the doctor's mother, the sweet-faced Mrs. McAllister, whose heart was centered in her son and her vegetable garden. Her heart warmed to the boy when she saw how carefully he thinned out the carrots, which had been sadly neglected.
"I've been so busy," she declared, "that I have actually stayed awake nights worrying about these carrots. There, see that?"
She pulled out a fairly good-sized carrot as she spoke. It had to come out, for it was much too near its neighbors. In fact, when Henry had thinned out half a row, he had quite a little pile of eatable carrots, each as large as his thumb. When Mrs. McAllister saw Henry deftly press the earth back again around the carrots, which remained standing, she left him quietly with a smile. Here was a gardener whom she could trust. Henry worked steadily in the hot sun, completing row after row of carrots, parsnips, and onions. When the mill bells rang at noon, he worked on, without noticing that his employer was again watching him. When he did at last notice her, he asked her, smiling, what she wanted done with the things he had pulled up.
"Oh, throw them away," she said indifferently. "Toss them over into the orchard, and sometime we'll burn them when they get dry."
"Do you mind if I take them myself?" asked Henry hesitatingly.
"Oh, no," said Mrs. McAllister cordially. "Have you chickens? That will be fine."
Henry was thankful that she went right along without waiting for an answer. But in a way, he did have chickens, he thought.
"You must stop working now," she said. "Any time you want to do something, there will be a place for you here."
She gave him a dollar bill and left the delighted boy with the piles of precious little vegetables. As long as Henry expected to return so soon, he hastily selected an orderly bunch of the largest of the carrots and the smallest of the onions. He added a few of the miniature parsnips for good measure. They looked like doll's vegetables. When Henry walked down the drive with his bouquet, he would have seen a face at the window if he had looked up. But he did not look up. He was too anxious to get to the little old man's shop and order his meat. So it happened that Henry walked in upon his little family at about 2 o'clock with all the materials for a feast. The feast could not be made ready before night, Jess hastened to explain to Benny, who was perfectly satisfied anyway with bread and milk in his pink cup.
"Your building is done," Benny informed his brother. "I builded lots of it."
"He really did," agreed Violet, leading the way to the sunny open spot, a trifle behind the house. The building was a fireplace. With an enormous amount of labor, the children had made quite a hollow at the base of a rock. This was lined completely with flat stones. More flat stones had been set on end to keep out the wind. On top of the stones lay the most wonderful collection of firewood that you can imagine, all ready to light. There were chips and bits of crumpled paper, pine cones and dry twigs. Beside the big rock was a wood pile. The children had apparently been working like beavers all the morning. Jess had found a heavy wire in the dump and had fastened it between two trees. On the wire, the kettle swung merrily.
"Fine! Fine!" shouted Henry when he saw it. "I couldn't have done it so well myself."
And he honestly believed it.
"We'll have dinner at night here," observed Jess impressively. "What did you buy?"
When the girls saw the tiny vegetables, they began with cries of delight to cut them from their stalks with Henry's knife and a broken paring knife. They scrubbed them in the washtub, filled the kettle half full of water from the well, and proceeded in great excitement to cut the raw meat into cubes. When this had been dropped into the kettle, Henry lighted the fire. It burned frantically, as if it were trying to encourage the stew to do its best. Violet laid the tin plate over the top for a cover, and they all stood by to hear the first bubble. Soon the savory stuff in the kettle began to boil in good earnest. Watch sat down gravely near it and gave an approving sniff at intervals.
"Keep it boiling," advised Henry as he departed again. "When I come home tonight, I'll bring some salt. And for mercy's sake, don't get on fire."
Violet pointed silently at the big teapot. The little girl had filled it with water in case of emergency.
"That's if Benny gets on fire," she explained, "or watch."
Henry laughed and went on his way happily enough. He wished he might share the delightful task of keeping the fire going and sniffing the stew. But when he found out his afternoon's duties, he changed his mind abruptly.
"Think you can clean up this garage?"
asked Dr. McAllister quizzically when he appeared. Henry flashed a look around the place and met the young man's eyes with a smile. It did need cleaning rather badly. When its owner purred out in his high-powered little car, Henry drew a long breath and began in earnest. He opened all the chests of drawers to begin with. Then he arranged all the tools in the largest deep drawer, and with a long-handled brush and a can of black paint that was nearly dry, he labeled the drawer "Tools" with neat lettering. Another drawer he lettered "Nails," and assorted its contents into a few of the many boxes that were lying around. He folded up the robes he found, swept off the shelves, and arranged the oil cans in orderly ranks, sorted out innumerable pairs of gloves, and then swept the floor. He washed the cement floor with the hose, and while waiting for it to dry, he rinsed his brushes in turpentine. To tell the truth, Henry had found a few things in the rubbish, which he had stored in his own pocket. The treasure consisted in this case of a quantity of bent and rusty nails of all sizes, and a few screws and nuts. When Dr. McAllister returned at 6 o'clock, he found Henry corking up the turpentine and arranging the brushes on the shelf.
"My word!" he exclaimed,
staring at his garage with his mouth open. Then he threw back his head and laughed till his mother came down the walk to see what the matter was.
"Look at my gloves, Mother," he said, wiping his eyes. "All made it up. They never met each other before that I remember."
Mrs. McAllister looked the garage over and observed the newly labeled drawers. Her son opened one of them and looked at his four hammers.
"My tack hammer, Mother," he said. "Your tack hammer, and two other hammers. That last one I never expected to see again. If you can use it, you may have it, my boy."
Now, it is no exaggeration to say that at that moment, if Henry had been asked what he wanted most of anything in the world, he would have answered without any hesitation whatever, "A hammer." He accepted it gratefully, hardly able to stand still, so anxious was he to put it into use on the hill he called home.
"Tomorrow's Sunday," said the doctor. "Shall I see you on Monday?"
"Oh, yes," replied Henry, who had lost all track of the days.
"The cherries need picking," said his new friend. "We could use any number of cherry pickers, if they were as careful as you."
He gave him an odd look.
"Could you?" asked Henry eagerly. "I'll surely come down."
With that, he bade his friends goodbye and started for home, richer by another dollar, 2 doughnuts the cook had given him, a pocket full of crooked nails, and the rest of the vegetables. When he reached his freight car home, a delicious savor greeted him.
"Onions!" he shouted, running up to the kettle.
The cook stood by and took off the cover and put in the salt. It was absolutely the most tantalizing odor that Henry had ever smelled. Years afterward, Jess tried to duplicate it with the same kettle, vegetables from the same garden, and all stirred up with the same spoon. But it didn't equal this stew in flavor.
"A ladle, as sure as I live," gasped Henry.
Jess had found a tin cup in the dump and fastened on a wooden handle with a bit of wire, and when she ladled out 4 portions on 4 plates of all sizes, some of them tin and laid a spoon in each. The children felt that the world held no greater riches. The tiny onions floated around like pearls. The carrots melted in your mouth, and the shreds of meat were as tender as possible from long boiling. A bit of bread in one hand helped the feast along wonderfully. The little wanderers ate until they could eat no more.
"I have time before dark to make Benny's cart," observed Henry, biting a crisp, sweet carrot.
"With my wheels?" asked Benny.
"Yes, sir, with your wheels," agreed Henry. "Only, when it's done, you'll have to cart stones in it."
"Sure," said Benny with satisfaction. "Cart stones or anything."
"We'll need it in making the dam," explained Henry for the benefit of his sisters. "Tomorrow's Sunday, so I shan't work down in the town. Do you think it's all right to build the pool on Sunday, Jess?"
"I certainly do," replied Jess with emphasis. "We're just building the dam so we can keep clean. I guess if Sunday is your only day off, it'll be all right."
Henry's conscience was set at rest as he began with great delight to hammer out his bent nails. He and Benny ran about, finding pieces of wood to fasten the wheels on. A visit to the dump was necessary at last, in order to find just the right piece of timber for a tongue. But before it was too dark to see, Henry had pounded the last nail in place and trundled the flat cart back and forth just to see it go. The cart seemed valuable enough to all of them to take into the house for the night, and Henry could not afford to laugh at Benny for going to sleep with his hand upon one of his precious wheels, for he himself had tucked his new hammer under his pillow.
Chapter 8. Building the Dam. Even a hammer makes a good pillow if one is tired enough. And the freight car family slept until the 9 o'clock church bells began to ring faintly in the valley. There were at least a dozen churches, and their faraway bells sounded sweetly harmonious in so many different keys.
"They almost play a tune," said Violet as she listened.
"I like music all right," replied Henry in a businesslike way, "but I for one shall have to get to work."
"This will be a good day to wash all the stockings," said Jess. "We'll all be wading so much in the brook anyway." After breakfast, the first thing Henry did was to survey with critical eyes the spot they had chosen for a pool. It was a hollow about 3 yards across. There were no stones in it at all.
"It's big enough already," remarked Henry at last, "but it hasn't enough water in it."
He measured its depth with a stick.
"We'll have to guess at inches," he said.
"I have a little tape measure in my work bag," ventured his sister Violet.
Henry flashed a smile at her. "Is there anything you haven't got in your work bag?" he asked her.
The children measured the wet stick carefully. The water was just 10 inches deep in the deepest part.
Henry explained his plan of engineering to his sisters. "We will have to haul some big logs across this narrow part and stuff them from this end with stones and underbrush. It ought to be 3 feet deep before we get through."
"Oh, Henry," protested Jess, "Benny would get drowned."
"Drowned," echoed Henry. "How tall do you think he is, anyhow?"
They measured the little boy and found him to be 42 inches tall. That settled it. The pool was designed to be 3 feet in depth. Luckily, the largest logs were not far away, but as it was a matter of great labor for the builders to drag them to the scene of operations.
"Let's get all the logs up here first," suggested Jess. "Then we can have the fun of laying them across."
The two older children dragged all the logs, while Violet and Benny attended to the stones with the help of the cart. Occasionally, Henry was called upon to assist with a heavy stone. But for the most part, Benny puffed out his cheeks and heaved the stones himself. In fact,
Henry decided at this point to let Benny drop them into the water as he gathered them. "Splash 'em right in, old fellow," he directed. "Only keep them in a nice straight line right across this place between these two trees. It won't make any difference how wet he gets," he added in an aside to Jess. "We can dry him in the sun." Jess thought a little differently, although she said nothing. She took off Benny's little crinkled blouse and one pair of bloomers and started to hang them on the line. "Good time to wash them," she exclaimed.
"Let me wash them," begged Violet. "You're more useful building the dam."
There was wisdom in this suggestion, so Jess accepted it gratefully and even added Henry's blouse to the laundry.
"When we finish the dam, they will surely be dry," she said.
As for Henry, he was only too glad to work without it. "Makes me feel lighter," he declared. Rare and beautiful birds came and watched the barefooted children as they scurried around, building their wall of masonry. But the children did not have any eyes for birds then. They watched with delighted eyes as each stone was added to the wall under the clear water, and it began to rise almost to the surface.
"That makes a solid foundation for the logs, you see," explained Henry with pride. "They won't be floating off downstream the minute we lay them on."
Then at last the time arrived when they were to lay the logs on.
"Let's wedge the first one between these two trees," said Jess, with a happy thought. "Then, if each end of the log is on the upper side of the trees, the harder the water pounds, the tighter the dam gets."
"Good work," exclaimed Henry admiringly. "That's just what we'll do." But the children were not at all prepared for what happened the moment the first big log was splashed into its place on top of the stone wall. The water, defeated in its course down the rocky bed, gurgled and chased about as it met the opposing log, and found every possible hole to escape.
"Leaks," said Henry briefly, as the water began to rush around both ends and pour over the top of the log.
"We'll make the log so thick it can't get through. We'll lay three logs across, with three logs on top of them, and three more on top of that."
The children set about stubbornly to accomplish this. Violet held great sprays of fine underbrush in place until each log was laid.
Wetter children were never seen, but nobody cared. They resolutely plugged the ends with more stones, more underbrush, and more logs. Each time a leak was discovered, someone dropped a stone over it. Even Benny caught the fever of conquering the mischievous water, which slipped from their grasp like quicksilver.
When the three top logs were at last dropped into place, the excited children sat down to watch the pool fill. This it did slowly. Finding now no means of exit, the water was quieter. It rose steadily up the barricade of logs. It widened beautifully. Henry could not sit still. "It slopes," he cried. "See how clear it is. And still. See how still it is." And then the water began to overflow the logs. It spilled over the top with a delightful curve, and on the other side it formed a natural waterfall, not high and narrow and graceful like the natural fall above, but very low and wide.
"Just like a regular mill dam," said Henry.
He held the measuring stick out as far as he could and plunged it into the water. It lacked an inch of being 3 feet deep.
"Deep enough," he declared.
In fact, it looked so deep that Benny could not conceal a slight fear.
"That's the beauty of the slope," observed Jess. "Benny can wade in just as far as he wants to, and no farther. We all know what the bed of the pool is like. No holes or stones."
The girls had to leave to prepare dinner, but Henry could not be persuaded to leave the wonderful swimming pool.
"I'd rather swim than eat," he said.
Luckily for the children, their supply of provisions was the largest of any day since their flight. The girls lighted the fire and heated up the remainder of the stew and cut the bread. The butter, hard and cold in the refrigerator, was taken out and four portions cut from it. The two doughnuts made four half rings for dessert. The cooks rang the dinner bell. This was an ingenious arrangement, hung on a low branch. It consisted of a piece of bent steel swung on a string. Violet hit it sharply with another piece of steel. It sounded deeply and musically through the woods, and the boys understood it and obeyed at once. It was evident the moment they appeared that at least three of the family had been swimming. Watt shook himself violently at intervals, spattering water drops in all directions. Henry and Benny, fresh and radiant, with plastered hair and clean, dry stockings and blouses, apparently liked to swim and eat, too. "You can actually swim a few strokes in it, Jess, if you're careful," Henry said, with excusable pride, as he sat down to dinner. Building a dam is wonderful sauce for a dinner.
"I think stew is much better the second day," observed Benny, eating hungrily.
There remained two more adventures for the eventful day. The girls cut their hair. Violet's dark curls came off first.
"They're awfully in the way," explained Violet, "and so much trouble when you're working."
They were tangled, too, and Jess cut them off evenly by a string with Violet's little scissors. Jess's chestnut hair was long and silky and nicely braided, but she never murmured as it came off, too. The two girls ran to the brook mirror to see how they looked. The new haircut was very becoming to both.
"I like you better that way," said Henry approvingly. "Lots more sensible when you're living in the woods."
Around 4 o'clock, the children took a long walk in the opposite direction from any of their other explorations. They were rewarded by two discoveries. One was a hollow tree, literally filled with walnuts, gathered presumably by a thrifty squirrel the previous fall. The other discovery frightened them a little just at first, for with bristling back and a loud bark, Watt suddenly began to rout out something in the leaves, and that something began to cackle and half run and half fly from the intruders. It was a runaway hen. The children succeeded in catching the dog and reducing him to order, although it was clear he liked very much to chase hens.
"She had some eggs, too," remarked Benny, as if trying to make pleasant conversation.
Jess bent over incredulously and saw a rude nest in the moss, in which there were 5 eggs.
"A runaway hen," said Henry, hardly believing his eyes. "She wants to hide her nest and raise chickens."
The children had no scruples at all about taking the eggs.
"Almost a gift from heaven," said Violet, stroking one of the eggs with a delicate finger. "It wouldn't be polite to refuse them."
Scrambled eggs made a delicious supper for the children. Jess broke all the eggs into the biggest bowl and beat them vigorously with a spoon until they were light and foamy. Then she added milk and salt and delegated Violet to beat them some more while she prepared the fire. The big kettle, empty and clean, was hung over the low fire and butter was dropped in. Jess watched it anxiously, tipping the kettle slightly in all directions. When the butter had reached the exact shade of brown, Jess poured in the eggs and stirred them carefully, holding her skirts away from the fire. She was amply repaid for her care when she saw her family attack the meal. Clearly, this was a feast day.
"We shall have to be satisfied tomorrow to live on bread and milk," she observed, scraping up the last delicious morsel. But when tomorrow came,
They had more than bread and milk, as you will soon see.
This is your host, Catherine Lopez-Luker. Thank you for joining us for this episode of Stories Come to Life. Be sure to join us next time when we continue to listen to the Boxcar Children. You can find a link to our podcast on the Marshall Public Library webpage, www.marshallpl.org. I'll talk to you again soon.